Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness. The makers of Hallmark greeting cards present The Baron of Arizona, starring Joseph Cotten. Now to preside over our program, here is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight you're going to hear the story of the most remarkable swindle in American history. The true story of a man who actually convinced the United States government he owned the state of Arizona, and whose record today is in the United States Department of Justice. To play this amazing and personable swindler, we had one of Hollywood's top actors who needs no more introduction than the name Joseph Cotten. Welcome back to the Hallmark program, Joe.
Thanks.
We're certainly glad you're going to play the Baron tonight.
Oh, it's a wonderful role, that.
And you don't accept any other kind. That's what I read in the papers. They say you don't like second raters.
Well, that shouldn't be held against me. Doesn't everyone want to avoid the second rate?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Why, even when folks make a small purchase, say a greeting card, they still don't want anything second rate.
Oh, I'd say especially when you buy a card, you want the best. Because it's usually someone you care about.
And you can make sure of getting the finest by just turning the card over and looking on the back for those three little words. Do you know what three words to look for, Joe?
Of course. A Hallmark card. You've taught practically everybody those words, Les.
Well, I'm glad you remember, Joe. You know, those three words, a Hallmark card, tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best. But now let's take our listeners out to Arizona, to Phoenix. The year is 1881. The city is filled with settlers and land-minded men. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you on the Reader's Digest, radio edition, another great story from real life. The Baron of Arizona, starring Joseph Cotten.
Stranger.
Don't crowd me, my good man. I'm putting up a public notice.
Not in front of this building, you're not. I don't want those signs on my property.
Your property, my dear sir. It may interest you to know that I own the entire city of Phoenix. If you'll be good enough to read this notice, you'll see why.
Residents of Phoenix, Arizona, and neighboring areas. On this, the ninth day of May, 1881, I hereby claim title to and ownership of every ranch, homestead, and square foot of city real estate within a radius of 75 miles of this notice. Say, what's this all about?
A land grant, of course. Land given to a Spanish nobleman in the early 18th century.
But this is the 19th century.
The grant is still recognized by our government, my friend. Now read on before I grow impatient.
As holder of the title to land granted to Miguel de Peralta, the Baron of Arizona and Caballero de los Colorados, I hereby serve notice that anybody occupying my land under any sort of title, whatever, must make suitable financial arrangements with me immediately or be ousted as a trespasser.
Signed, James Addison Revis.
Revis? Who's that?
That is me. Now move over, sir, or I shall have you arrested for poaching on my property.
You mean I have to pay you $500 for living on the land I rightfully bought from Hal Bullitt?
You didn't rightfully buy it from anyone, Mr. Nielsen. You see, I have a prior claim.
From who?
From His Royal Majesty, the King of Spain.
Doggone it, Revis. I bought this property for $3,000. I'm not going to buy it again from you or anybody else.
It belongs to me. I purchased the title indirectly from a descendant of the man who was granted this land in 1841, Miguel de Peralta.
Who was Miguel de Peralta?
Gentleman of the King's Bedchamber, a grandee of old Spain. Why, his father was none other than Jose Gaston de la Cueva Montes de la Vega de Peralta.
Give me any of that Spanish fandango, Revis. This is highway robbery.
Why, Mr. Luna, Chandler, your settlement is just a drop in the bucket. Wait till I deal with the Southern Pacific Railway.
What have you got on them?
Got on them, my dear sir. I own 150 miles of their railroad.
Now, look here, Amos. You don't seriously think the Southern Pacific Railway is going to pay you $50,000 just because you happen to have a piece of paper that...
Piece of paper is a deed, Mr. Foley, a deed to the land occupied by your railroad tracks. You have no right to run trains over my property.
But you can't hold us up for $50,000. How do I know your title's any good?
Well, are you questioning the authenticity of the documents I've put before you?
No, not exactly, but...
Miguel de Peralta was a distant kinsman of the king, a gentleman of the king's bedchamber, a knight of the military order of Carlos III. Why, his father was none other than Jose Gaston de la Corba Montez de la Vega de Peralta.
Yes, I know. My lawyers have assured me that the Peralta grant is authentic enough. I'd like to know how you came into possession of it.
Why, I purchased it, of course, indirectly from a descendant of the original Miguel de Peralta. Poor man was an illiterate Mexican who had no idea what the grant was worth, and before he died, I bought it from him for $1,000.
$1,000?
Yeah.
Well, for $1,000, you've bought yourself a property that's worth countless millions. You're the richest man in Arizona.
My dear sir, I'm the Baron of Arizona. The Baron of Arizona, that's what they call me in those days. The fabulous Baron of Arizona. Outright owner of 20,000 square miles in the heart of the territorial Southwest. Yes, I had a barony, all right. But I didn't buy it for $1,000. I paid for it with years of hard work and patient, careful planning that began 12 years ago in a little office in Santa Fe, where I had a job in a government bureau that investigated Spanish land claims.
Just got a report on the Riviera claim, Rivas. It's as good as gold.
You mean that broken-down old sheep herder really owns some land of his own?
Well, about 11 acres, according to the records. He's a direct descendant of a Spanish grandee.
Well, that doesn't prove anything. He could have forged these papers.
Yeah, he could have forged them. If he'd learned old Spanish, counterfeited the seals, used the proper parchment, and mastered the handwriting of a 17th century padre. But just plain forgery wouldn't get him very far.
No. Why not?
Because we really investigate these claims, young man. If anybody wanted to put one over on us, he'd have to go back 150 years. And falsify official records all the way down the line. Not only in this country, but in every country where there might be a legal heir.
That sounds like quite a job.
It's an impossible job. Nobody can forge a land grant and get away with it, Reavers. The federal penitentiary is full of men who've tried it.
That was the spring of 1867. The year I began practicing penmanship in the flowery hand of the old padres who had written so many of the documents I sorted daily at the office. That was the year I decided to create Miguel de Peralta, gentleman of the king's bedchamber and knight of the military order of Carlos III. You see, the Peralta grant was pure invention on my part. I created Miguel de Peralta and his entire family. The Baron of Arizonaca never existed, except in my mind, nor did any of his so-called descendants, until I faked an old Spanish letter one day and deliberately inserted it into our office files to test my skill as a forger.
What are you doing, Rivas?
Oh, just checking over these old records. Have you ever heard of the Baron of Arizonaca?
Why?
Well, I just came across an interesting letter in one of the files. It says here that the Baron of Arizonaca was a grandee of Spain, and that King Ferdinand gave him the largest land grant of any nobleman in his court.
Well, what's that got to do with us?
Well, it might be worth looking into. Obviously, the old padre who wrote the letter knew what he was talking about. Well, unless it's a forgery. What do you think, Akins?
We'll see. Well, I shouldn't think this letter was a forgery. It looks legitimate enough.
How about that seal?
The seal? Perfect.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to copy the contents of this letter and
if I can't get some information on the Peralta Grant.
What for?
Who knows? Might lead me to the Baron of Aratanaka. The day after Higgins failed to recognize my letter as a forgery, I quit my job and started on the long trail of planting evidence to prove the existence of Miguel de Peralta and his far-flung descendants. For each and every member of this imaginary family, I forged birth and death certificates and wills and deeds and letters from prominent statesmen and personally inserted them into the official archives of cities in Mexico, Portugal, and Spain. It took me almost 10 years to do so, and I traveled thousands of miles. But at last it was done. And when I forged my last document, the deed to the land, I filed it with the Surveyor General of the United States.
Mr. Rivas, this is an amazing document. It gives you ostensible ownership of land that's been bought and paid for. What are the people who live on it going to do?
Oh, I'll make some sort of settlement.
With each and every one of them?
Each and every one of them on my land, aren't they?
And you propose to charge them a fee or have them ousted from your property?
Exactly.
Well, it's none of my business, Mr. Rivas. But those people won't give up without a struggle. Some of them fought for the land they're living on, conquered it from the Indians. And if you want it, you'll have to conquer it back.
Well, I see no reason for resorting to military methods, especially in this case. After all, I've learned that the pen is mightier than the sword.
America's favorite magazine, presented by the makers of Hallmark cards, America's favorite greeting cards. But first, here's Cy Harris with a message of interest.
For more than a third of a century, quality has been a habit with the makers of Hallmark cards. That's why, when you're looking for distinctive greeting cards, it's important to look for Hallmark cards. They're the kind of cards you can be proud to send, proud to receive. In Hallmark cards, you'll find the beauty and charm of fine design, heartwarming color used with the greatest of care and good taste. And what's even more important, you'll always find a Hallmark card will say just what you want to say the way you want to say it. You'll recognize Hallmark cards by the distinction, and your friends will recognize them too. Those three little words that mean so much, a Hallmark card, will tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best. Now, once again, here's your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine.
Our program continues now with the second act of tonight's story, The Baron of Arizona, starring Joseph Cotton.
In my hand, the pen was mightier than the sword. Forged documents I had planted from Mexico City to Madrid began to pay off long before the Surveyor General completed his report. All along the line, people who were afraid of losing their land came to my offices and settled up. And as the money rolled in, I began to enjoy the luxury of being a baron.
Your carriage is ready, sir.
The new one, Parker? The one with my crest on it?
Yes, sir. You can see it through the window, sir.
Ah, isn't it glorious to spend money when you have it, Parker?
Yes, sir.
All my life, I've wanted to have enough of it, too much of it, so that I wouldn't care whether I spent it foolishly or not. And now I can spend it as foolishly as I please, as foolishly as a baron.
Yes, sir.
James Addison Rivas, gentleman of the King's Bedchamber, Knight of the Military Order of... Parker!
Yes, Mr. Rivas.
You call that a carriage?
Yes, sir, I believe that's what the coachmaker called it.
And where the devil are the horses?
They're right there, sir.
Two paltry horses for the Baron of... Hot them white, all white.
Yes, sir. I'll see to it right away, sir. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Gordon.
Excuse me, Parker. Mr. Reavis. Mr.
Martin, what is the meaning of this? Don't you know it's unseemly for a baron to receive his lawyer at home? Couldn't you wait till I got down to the office?
Well, I thought it was important, sir. There's an article in the Phoenix Gazette about you, and it plainly...
I know, Gorton. They're after my scalp, as they always have been, but there's no cause for alarm.
Well, your claim to the Peralta grant isn't as strong as it might be, Baron. After all, you're not a direct descendant. Suppose the Surveyor General claims you bought the deed illegally.
Don't talk like that. My deed and certificate of transfer have been examined by the best lawyers in the country.
I'm just supposing, Baron. The Surveyor General is going to suppose, too. And if a legal heir ever turns up...
If a legal heir ever turns up, I'll be the first to know about it.
However, you've given me an idea, Gorton.
What kind of an idea?
Well, it just occurred to me that a living descendant of Miguel de Peralta might strengthen my claim rather than weaken it.
How?
Now, don't ask me a lot of silly questions. I'm not prepared to answer them yet. But if I find what I'm looking for, my claim will be as solid as the Rock of Gibraltar.
The idea was relatively simple. If I could find an orphan whose parentage was unknown, I might adopt the child. And then by manipulating a few birth records, I could prove that this child was the only living descendant of Miguel de Peralta. And in so doing, I would become the legal guardian of a legal heir and have secondary claim over... even stronger than the first. Gorton, congratulate me. Our worries are over.
Hey, Baron, where have you been these past few weeks?
Searching, my friend. Searching for the only living descendant of Miguel de Peralta. And at last, I've found it.
You mean there is a descendant?
Oh, yes, Gorton. A 15-year-old girl who knows nothing of her gallant ancestry. I happen to run across a record of her birth in an obscure mission in San Bernardino. Poor child's an orphan.
And she knows nothing of her ancestry?
How could she? She's an orphan. And don't look shocked, old man. I have the necessary papers to adopt her as my legal ward.
Well, who is she? I mean, where is she?
Her name is Carmelita, poor thing. She works as a servant girl on an East Arizona ranch. And she hasn't a penny to her name. I've made arrangements to see her the day after tomorrow.
You're going to tell her who she is?
Well, naturally, as her guardian, it's my duty to rescue her from a life of drudgery. As my ward, her noble ancestors will give me a clear title to the Peralta grant.
You asked for to see me? Senorita?
Yes, Carmelita. The years I've been searching for you to the far corners of the earth so that you might share in a fortune that rightfully belongs to you, in part. From now on, your life will be nothing but riches.
You are joking, senor.
I was never more serious in all my life. You're a baroness, Carmelita, a true baroness. Your great-great-grandfather was a gentleman in the king's bedchamber.
And this make me baronet?
You don't understand. You're a direct descendant of Miguel de Peralta, distant kinsman of the king. I've come to take you away from here.
Ah, si, senor. I would like to go away with you. You are so handsome.
Well, I'm going to place you in a convent until you're old enough to assume your new responsibilities. The good sisters will teach you grace and refinement and endow you with all the accomplishments of a noble young lady.
What those words mean?
Never you mind, Carmelita. From this day forward, your life is in my hands. She was 15 then, and in 3 years, while the United States government continued to investigate my claim, she'd become a remarkably attractive young lady. I went to see her as often as I could, and when I took her out of the convent, I was so impressed with her charms, I wanted to build a palace for her.
For me, Uncle James?
For you, my dear.
Oh, you've done so much for me already. How could I accept any more?
Carmelita, I haven't really done anything for you. Not out of the goodness of my heart.
My heart doesn't have any goodness.
How can you say that? To me, you are the most wonderful person in all the world.
To you, perhaps, because you don't know me.
What is there to know about a man who is all kindness and gentleness inside? A man who's made my life a dream, a fairy tale.
For his own gain, Carmelita.
For my gain, too. You could have kept it to yourself. You did not have to tell me I was related to Miguel de Peralta. Oh, if it were not for you, I would still be a servant girl instead of a princess.
No, Carmelita, you are a princess. You're the sweetest girl I've ever known. That's why I can't go on fooling you any longer. I have a confession to make.
No. No, please, do not spoil my dream. I want to know you only as you are. As a fine gentleman who deserves to be called the Baron of Arizona. And if there is anything in your life which does not fit that title, I never want to hear it.
Why, my dear?
Because I love you, Uncle James. Not as a girl worships her guardian, but as a woman loves a man.
This is a fairy tale for both of us. If we were to be married, we could live among the castles in the air.
That is what you promised me, Uncle James. Castles in the air and on the earth.
You shall have them. We'll both have them together. We'll have everything that money can buy. We'll travel all over the world and live like royalty. As long as the fairy tale lasts.
Uncle James, do you love me?
All my heart, darling. Marry me, Carmelita. I want you to become the Baroness of Arizona. We traveled all over the world. We built castles, too, and mansions in St. Louis, Washington, and Madrid. We spent almost $20 million. But there was always more coming in, and every time we appeared in public, it was a parade. And then one day, Gordon burst into my office.
Aaron, it's all over. The jig is up.
What jig? What are you talking
about? The Peralta Grant. It's been disclaimed. The Surveyor General's report just came out.
I have nothing to fear.
Don't be so sure of yourself, Baron. They have proof that Carmelita's birth was never recorded in that San Bernardino mission where you found her
name.
That's
ridiculous. I saw it on the register myself.
Well, whoever planted it there slipped up on the other set of records.
Other set? Is there another?
Yes, Mr. Revis, there is another. The good padres of the mission index their records day by day in a separate volume. And in that volume, Carmelita's name was never entered. The Surveyor General suggests that your entire claim is a forgery.
How dare you say that? We'll fight this case right up to the Supreme Court. I don't care if it costs me my fortune, Gordon. I'll spend every cent I've got.
You haven't got very many, Mr. Revis.
What do you mean?
Take a look at your books. You'll see how much you've gone through. And there won't be any more coming in either. Not after this.
Gordon, will you stop gloating over my funeral? I'm not late. Yet.
No, not yet, Baron. But wait till you get to court.
Your Honor, chemical and photographic examination of this document proves beyond any doubt that the first and last pages are genuine, but the intervening ones are forgeries. Here again, the original names on those official records have been carefully erased and false ones substituted in their places. Birth certificates, wills, letters were all expertly forged. But the inevitable happened. Mr. Revis at the mission neglected to enter the name of his bogus ward in the index of the register. Your Honor, it's an open and shut case. I ask for conviction.
And in the judgment of this court, you, James Edison Revis, are guilty of the charge of forgery. I hereby sentence you to 6 years in the federal penitentiary.
For me, I don't want you to.
Why not, my dear?
The fairy tale is over.
I'll be a broken old man when I come out of here. I wouldn't want you to know me that way.
What difference does it make how I know you?
Don't you remember what you said, Baron? If I can't live up to the title of Baron, you never want to hear about it.
That was 10 years ago.
Yesterday, too. I can't be a Baron anymore, Carmelita. When I finish my term here, all I'll be able to do is stay in the background and be quiet and cook. So people won't laugh at me.
I won't laugh.
No, no, it's no use. It'd spoil everything. You stuck to me now. I want to spend my last shadowy days alone. Going to the library, perhaps, and reading about the castles we built in the air.
And on the ground, too,
Jay. No, there weren't any on the ground. That's why I'm going to drift out of sight and let people forget about me.
You want me to forget about you?
Yes, darling. Forget about me as I am now. So you can remember the Baron of Arizona.
Joseph Cotton. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Cotton will be back in just a moment. But first, here is Cy Harris.
You know, it's a charming custom, sending valentines. And every year it seems to grow, but that's easy to understand when you see the Hallmark valentines. For a third of a century, Hallmark craftsmen have been creating beautiful greeting cards that say just what you want to say, the way you want to say it. So you would expect the makers of Hallmark cards to design valentines that will delight everyone you know. Hallmark valentines have a way of making you want to remember all your friends on St. Valentine's Day. There are romantic valentines of lace and satin and flowers. Tender valentines that will be cherished for years to come. Valentines so clever, you want to show them to all your friends. Then for the children, valentines gay in color with funny verses and surprising tricks. Valentines created with the imagination that makes Hallmark dolls so enchanting. And by the way, Hallmark dolls make dazzling valentines for children, especially the beautiful Queen of Hearts. Tomorrow, give yourself the pleasure of sending Hallmark valentines to all those dear to you. And remember, they carry added meaning because those three little words on the back, a Hallmark card, tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best.
Thank you, Cy Harris. And now, once again, here is the star of tonight's Radio Reader's Digest, Joseph Cotton. Well, Joe, you certainly made the Baron of Arizona live for us tonight. It was a great performance.
Thanks, Les. I enjoyed it. Tell me, what's your story next week?
A hilarious story that you'll have to hear to believe. But it actually happened just after the war.
Oh, well, what's it about?
It's about a young man who was shipped home with a boatload of war brides.
What?
It's called I Was a Male War Bride, and our star is Robert Young.
Lucky job. That I like to hear.
So don't miss it. It's one of the funniest stories to come out of the war. Next Thursday, when the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you another story based on true facts from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. I Was a Male War Bride, starring Robert Young.
Quality, always look on the back of your cards for those three items.
been carefully selected to give you expert and friendly service. Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness. And now, this is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine, saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time, when our story will be...